Something unusual arrived in my mailbox this week. It was very large and very fancy, elegant black and silver envelope with a ribbon. And the font was large with an Edwardian script, and it began, "Marcia and Joan request the pleasure of your company on the occasion of their marriage on Saturday, October 3rd, 2015. It was lovely to receive such an elegant invitation to a wedding that I was pretty sure I was officiating at. But it was unusual just because I don't get those fancy invitations anymore. They're such a lovely thing to get. And while this kind of formality still exists for weddings, what we usually receive as far as invitations for most everything else these days is through Evites or Doodles or web-based messages that ask us to respond electronically. Sometimes it's just to a date for an event. So the pleasure of your company is still what's being requested, but the invitations we receive don't always expect that your actual company will be experienced in person. Last Sunday, we kicked off the theme for the month of September, as you know, that asked the question, what does it mean to be a person of invitation? 3 months ago, my husband and co-minister, the Reverend Wayne Arneson, and I were given a chance to first-hand experience that question by saying yes to your invitation, to us, to serve you this year. So we will be physically experiencing the pleasure of your company about twice a month, and the rest of the time we will be doing that electronically through emails, conference calls, Zoom, Skype, whatever works at the time. Little did we know that when these themes were chosen, that we would be learning to live into the question of what does it mean to be a people, a person of invitation. So at the same time we were looking at your themes, Wayne and I were inspired to look at a different set of themes to preach about for the coming year at the other congregation we serve in Cleveland, Ohio, West Shore Unitarian Universalist Church. And we were really taken by an essay by David White, who entitled his essay, 10 Questions That Have No Right to Go Away. So we built a series of themes based on those questions. And in his first essay, White asked the readers to reflect on the question, do I know how to have a real conversation? So we put this to the worship associates in Cleveland and the worship leaders here at Fox Valley and said, so what do these two themes have in common with each other? And, happily, it came to be, what does it mean to be a person of invitation, particularly one who invites real conversation into your life? First glance, it seems pretty simple. I mean, we have conversations all the time. You probably are going to engage in something we call conversations after the service today. You'll go home, you'll open your email, you'll respond to a question or a comment from a friend or a family member or a blogger or a news story. Invitations into conversations are everywhere in our lives. Television, radio programs, articles, always asking for your opinion. Posts on Facebook and Twitter, shouting us to respond. The pleasure of our company is requested not only through emails, but conference calls, Skype, Zoom. Seems pretty simple, but you know, if you think about it, what does all this conversation that we get invited into usually involve? Here's my experience. Someone in a group offers an opinion, and then someone else offers their opinion. And then someone else might disagree with that opinion, and then somebody disagrees with the opinion that was disagreed with. Is that a real conversation? For me, it feels more like throwing darts. You throw out an idea, and you hope it gets close to the imaginary bullseye of truth, and then somebody else throws out a dart. But frequently, there's no creative relationship between those two darts, except maybe they hit the same dartboard. Or even worse, conversation's not like darts. It's like curling. I don't know if y'all know what curling is, but I suppose so, because I did notice you have your very own curling rink here in Appleton. But it is a sport that is near and dear to my Canadian mother-in-law's heart. And she, at 90 years old, actually does a modified version of curling up in Canada. So I've gotten familiar with this odd sport. In curling, you not only try to get your shot close to the bullseye of truth, but you try and knock out that vulnerable rock of opinion that the last person threw out. And what's missing in most conversations is having that third person, the sweeper, that comes and cleans up after the mess has been made from the rock on the ice. Now, conversations like this don't have to be the fierce and angry arguments you see in online forums. They can be perfectly polite and intelligent, Midwestern, in fact. But you get the feeling that people aren't really connecting. They're not really doing anything or creating anything new. They're competing, or they're holding up their side of a social formality. And for the shy or introverted person who's in a group where this kind of conversation happens, they don't usually get involved because they're more of a spectator. So I think there's some confusion around what's the difference between an argument, a debate, social media engagement, and conversation? They are all different ways of enjoying and the pleasure of each other's company, and there is a place for each of them. But the meaning of what does it mean to have company and conversation is changing. And today's digital media enables us to be in the company of people from all over the world who may not physically be present. Our faces and bodies may be visible to those with whom you're talking, but your body is not actually in the room. So we have to wonder, what difference does that make? Is that really company? What is the relationship between the pleasure of your company and how the company is made possible? If the medium is the message, as the academic techno-prophet Marshall McLuhan taught us, then is face-to-face conversation a different thing than trying to have a conversation about the same subject through emails and texts and messages and on a Zoom screen? Well, all of this is relevant to what we're doing this year together. This year, we, the fellowship, you, me, Wayne, the ministerial settlement representative, Reverend Jan Eller Isaacs, we are all doing something that is very new. It's never been done in quite this way before. We're building relationships between minister and congregation and between congregations, both in person and remotely. And we are being eyed very carefully by the association to see just how this thing is going to work. As the wider Association of Unitarian Universalism is contemplating both brick and mortar and virtual or electronic congregations as a new possibility for covenanted communities. So all of us are wondering, how's this going to work? Can it work? I'm really excited about this new venture. And I can't also help but wonder if our form of religious community, especially this form of religious community, is by nature face-to-face, that must rely on real and deep conversation to sustain health and growth. I have to wonder, is there something in the essence and something in the potential of religious community that means it must invite you to a place where you show up in person with your body, where you're invited to talk every week with strangers and friends alike? So my friends and colleagues at the Unity Unitarian Church in St. Paul, they ask three things of their members to be full partners and participants in the life of that congregation. They first asked them to learn and practice a prayerful daily discipline. Second thing they ask is to develop the intimacy skills necessary to go deep quickly with strangers. And then the third, and then as a result of that, find ways to bless and serve the world. It's that second phrase, to go deep quickly with strangers, that I find the most provocative of all, because it seems counterintuitive, doesn't it? It would seem that the congregation is a place where over time you build trust with the people that you know in order to reveal your human self. All those things that all of us human beings share, but whose particular constellation is unique to you at this moment in time. To be invited to go deep with strangers, with people you barely know, that is a spiritual discipline. But how do we do that? Where do we start? Well, I always start with poetry. And White reminds us, start close in. Don't take the second step or the third. Start with the first thing, close in, the step you don't want to take. I also think you start by opening a window. Opening a window to the closed room of yourself. And by opening a window, you begin to let new air and new light into your being, and you open the window and you see what comes in as well as what you can let out. So this is an invitation to our song leaders this morning to come forward and offer a song to augment this idea of opening the window. And in this case, to let the dove fly in. David White's first essay was inspired by an experience he had with his teenage daughter. And I want to share with you that story now. White writes, quote, "There are many tough conversations, but one of the most difficult is between a parent and an adolescent. Partly because as a parent, we are almost always attempting to relate to someone who is no longer there. The parent, therefore, usually tries to start the conversation by offering a perspective that the daughter finds not only out of date, but also unhelpful. The daughter then replies by way of defense with something just a shade more unhelpful, and so the process continues. A year or so ago, I found myself in exactly this dynamic. My daughter's bedroom door slamming shut just as I was about to say that last deeply satisfying, unhelpful thing. But then I caught myself. And I said, David, this is not a real conversation. How do you make this a real conversation? I gave it the old 10-minute cool-down time. I walked into the kitchen, made tea, put out on the tray a plate of cookies, a milk pitcher, a cup, and a saucer. And then I knocked on her door and said in a very different, more invitational voice, "Come on, Charlotte, I've made tea. Let's go have a talk." As soon as I put the tray down, we had sat next to each other, almost by accident, I happened to say exactly the right thing. I said, "Charlotte, tell me one thing you'd like me to stop doing as a father. And tell me one thing you'd like me to do more of." She suddenly gazed up at me with a lovely look in her eyes, one I knew from her very early infancy. She was engaged again, because at last I was really inviting her to tell me who she had become, not who she had been or who I wanted her to be, but who she was now. End quote. I really love that story because it's been my experience with youth and adolescents that they have a very high BS filter, and they can detect when an adult is trying to talk to them as the child they were rather than the person they are now or the person they're becoming. It requires something different of us. And as White discovered, having a real conversation requires a couple of things. First, I think it does involve deep listening. It requires risk, and it demands robust vulnerability. So let's unpack that for a minute, what those look like. Deep listening. You know, I think it's a discipline that almost seems extinct in our culture today. It's very hard to know how to listen to one another without anticipating our next thought, our next word. Everything happens so fast, we feel like we have to respond immediately. And at the same time, in our culture, there is a great longing for spiritual practices that help us slow down, help us to listen, both to our own inner voice, to the voice of God, or to one another. Deep listening is a skill that's practiced in the journey groups, allowing for space between comments, encouraging silence and reflection, slowing the conversation down. I have to tell you, I was so impressed with the Wellspring Wednesday this past week, with the depth of conversation and the sharing that happened between individuals who, some of whom may not have known each other well, or in some cases, not at all. There are few places in our lives where that degree of deep listening is not only encouraged, but where you actually get to engage with it. And here at the Fellowship, this is one such place. Having a real conversation requires risk. Risking what? Risk being known. And being known is scary. We all have a public face, a private space, and that public face can even be what we lead with in our most intimate relationships. And yet what's really required is a degree of intimacy and a desire to be known. I'm fortunate in my work to be an officiant at weddings. And when I sit down with couples, I always ask them, so, you know, what kind of readings do you want? And invariably, many of them choose the famous passage from 1 Corinthians 13. You know the one. It's like Paul's writing about what love is. Love is patient. Love is kind. And he goes on. It's a wonderful passage. But very rarely do couples read all the way down to the end, this odd passage where he says, for now we see through a glass darkly, or another interpretation is through a mirror dimly. But then, face to face, now I know in part, but then I will know fully, just as I also have been fully known. There are many interpretations of this. But what intrigues me about this passage is talking with couples about what it means for them to be fully known by someone else. Now, in Paul's mind, he was writing about being fully known and understood by the mind and heart of God. But for those for whom God is not that relevant of an idea, I still think it speaks to our very human longing known, to have someone get us, understand us, respect us, appreciate us. Even if we disagree with an opinion being expressed in a conversation, being known is not just about getting our unique personalities. It's a deeper knowing of the human condition and the human spirit that transcends even these personalities. And it happens if we're able to get real with each other. So to accept an invitation into real conversation also requires, as White phrased it, robust vulnerability. Start close in, White reminds us. Take the step you do not want to take. So this weekend, the leaders of the fellowship have been invited into a conversation with the chief of police, Todd Thomas, perhaps as early as next week. Will it be a, quote, real conversation? I don't know yet. I don't. Every conversation can have an agenda behind it. Every conversation that we have runs the risk of saying the wrong thing, hurting another person, being misunderstood. I don't know what will be said, but I do know this. I do know that an invitation to a deeper conversation was extended to engage with difficult issues. Now, I have to also tell you, this was not the smooth entree into Appleton that I had imagined for myself. But we don't get to choose what life brings to us. We do get to choose how to respond with wisdom, with caution, but also with a sense of curiosity to more fully know another and more fully be known. This is what we do here in community. We accept the invitation to explore the depth dimension of life by virtue of showing up and being here whenever we can, week after week. We take a chance on showing people who we are when we risk the first step of opening up real conversations that matter. We engage the Healthy Congregations team if we find it difficult to talk to one another. And as human beings, as creatures of meaning, we long and crave knowing and being truly known by one another. And it's the best way that I know how to do this is by engaging in real, honest, respectful, risky, and vulnerable conversation. This is the way we build a friendship, a marriage, a religious community, a life. So this is our pledge to you this year. During our time at the fellowship, we will try our best to not miss opportunities to get real with one another, to listen deeply, take risks, be vulnerable, and we hope you'll consider this as well. It won't be easy. You know, I know there are probably some things in this sermon already that you're going to be waiting to talk about. That's all right. There'll be things that we may do or say this year that are challenging to your identity, but I trust that what's even more important is the process of talking to one another about it. So I hope you'll consider this a formal invitation to enjoy the pleasure of your company in real conversation, not just throwing darts at one another or at a dartboard or casting that curling stone and hoping it will knock around some opinions, but real, honest, heartfelt conversations. It'll make all the difference as we journey together this year. Come and go with us.